and welcome to a miserable podcast of Secrets, the official TNL podcast, the podcast of thenextlevel.com, which you can find at the-nextlevel.com, or just point yourself to Google and type in thenextlevel.com and we'll be somewhere at the top. I'm your host, Eric Manch, known as Sleeve on the TNL forums, and with me as usual is, oh, you know what, I don't have my usual order here.
Well, who's right, well, actually, sitting right next to you?
Just look around.
Yeah, open your eyes, man.
Well, let's start with Chuck Forrester, better known as Chucks on the forums.
Hey, hey.
All right. Next, we'll go over to Chris Rubin, better known as MacDeus on the boards.
Hey.
And then we have next our M to the Z to the O, better known as Mizzo.
Our
Monster Hunter. Monster Hunter. Okay.
And, of course, we have our fearless leader, Nick Womakis, better known as Nick.
Yep.
And this week, we have a special guest, very special to us, certainly, because he's a member of our forums and a longtime member of the TNL community. His name is Jonathan Hurtado, and on the community, he's known as Cow Disease.
Did we give our last names here now? I thought we didn't do that.
That's weird.
That we kept.
Well, I don't know. We always sort of set up a.
The new internet is all about
real names. Who cares
if we
kill a new guy, basically?
Yeah, we always set up an exception for Mizzo, I guess, for some reason. I don't know why. I think somebody asked him if he wanted us to say his last name during the podcast.
I don't care. Everybody on the forum knows my last name.
It's sort of evolved and, moved towards that.
No, I have a question.
Would you like to start using your full name? Mizzo.
It would take too long. It would kill too much air.
Think about maybe doing
all
it.
Sizes would blow it up to infinity.
Now, Hurtado, is that like a Native American name? Like, is that like hurt a doe? Is that like something?
What?
That's some kind of doe hunter background that you've had, or what is the origin of that?
I have no idea. I can tell you that it's not a Native American.
She's like,
name.
These assholes first they blow me up and say my real last name. Now they're going to make fun of it.
I think it's Spanish for thief or something similar. Or Brazilian for. What does hurtado mean? It does mean something, doesn't
isn't
it?
Isn't ladrón, isn't that?
Ladrón.
I think it is.
Ladrón.
Yeah.
That's all right. It's all right, Jonathan. We'll edit this whole part out.
Except for hurtado.
No, you're not. You guys are going to keep it in here.
If we edited out all the garbage, we'd have a 0-minute podcast.
Yeah, we wouldn't have the luxurious 2-hour, 40-minute podcast that we turn in on a regular basis. Oh, and I think I forgot to mention this is episode 7. This is episode 7 of
Lucky Number.
Miserable Podcast of Secrets. So, since this is our first podcast with a special guest, I figured we would let our guest guide the main subject of the podcast. Jonathan, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing these days and why you wanted to come onto the podcast today?
Well, I'd started working at a company called Paragon Studios, who are currently making the City of Heroes MMO. And I figured, I love TNL. I've been visiting the forum for a few years, and I heard you guys talk on the podcast, and I said, hey, I want in on this. So I asked Nick if I could participate, and he said sure, and here I am.
Yeah, he sent me a private message on the forum, and the subject line was, if a bozo like you, and then I opened it up and said, if a bozo like you can be on a podcast, why can't I? And it really touched my heart.
Bad language makes for bad feelings, as RoboCop once told us.
Well, I liked bozo as a kid, so I took it as a compliment.
But Jonathan, since you seem to be involved in the video game industry, I thought that that would be of interest to a lot of people. So why don't you tell us a little bit how long you've been doing that? Been working in the industry.
Well, actually, I would be considered a rookie since I didn't start working until late August. Before that, I was actually going for my master's in computer science at DigiPen, and before that I worked several years as a web developer, and I didn't want to do that anymore because I actually wanted to work in games. So, unfortunately, the knowledge that I could give you guys probably won't be as extensive as some would like, but I could, I mean, but I've...
Of course, like everybody's path into the industry is a little bit different, so, I mean, nobody's going to be able to exactly follow in your footsteps, as it were, but you know, at least you can sort of offer us a little bit of an inside take as to what it's like, because you know more about the video game industry than probably any of us here, except maybe Nick, who knows everything about everything. So, yeah, sure. Just go ahead and tell us.
When you look at a completed game, a finished game, sometimes some games like Gears of War, I believe, have these credits at the end where you get to see pictures of everybody that worked on the game. When you have a finished product, what percentage of that finished product is one person responsible for? Do people just do a little bit of, you know, just concentrate on one thing and contribute that? Or is there a lot of cross-training and cross-work in making a modern video game?
Depends on the size of the project. If something like Gears of War, typically you can have like a programmer working on a specific thing, like graphics. You can have an AI programmer. You can have a networking programmer. For smaller games, usually it's more on the lines where that person is more responsible for a whole bunch of things. Like the graphics programmer could also be the audio programmer and the AI programmer. So it depends on the size of the team. The smaller the team, the more responsibilities each person has to deal with when making the game.
Okay, so it is like Game Dev Story. I knew it.
I was about to ask that.
I knew it.
You guys bid for the hit programmers in some kind of auction, just like in Game Dev Story. Yeah.
And so now City of Heroes is well established. It's been around for a little while. Does Paragon keep a team that's always working on expanding that and bringing new things to it, just doing that, or are you extended over maybe two titles or doing research on some future project, or are you just doing that one game at any one time?
You're either assigned to you're typically assigned to one project. Very rarely do you cross over into another one unless like the Sega project is about to launch and they're in like an all hands on deck approach. But at least for my particular case, I'm working on City of Heroes, as you said, just expanding on the title, adding new stuff to it.
All right. Those are all my questions.
Forever.
All right. So Jonathan, had you always figured that you wanted to work in the game industry and just were sort of like thinking to yourself, no, this isn't going to happen. I better do something more practical with myself. Or was this sort of like a realization you came to one day that you just sort of decided to go into it?
Well, I was always interested in the game industry. It wasn't apparent to me like back in 2001 how I would get into it, partially because I was in the East Coast, and despite New York City being the center of many things, game development isn't one of them. So there weren't any game companies out there, so it wasn't immediately apparent, like, how do you get work in this industry? So I stumbled upon web development because it's what I could do with the comp sci degree. And it was fun for a few years, and then I started getting a little bored with it. I mean, did all that I could making websites. And I'm like, you know, I want to look into getting into the industry. At that point, DigiPen, which had an undergraduate program, recently added a graduate program. And I felt like here's a program where I could not only get a master's degree in computer science, I could learn how to make games. Before I came to that, though, I was still wavering whether I could be a computer artist or if I should, you know, go with what I know and be a programmer. And I actually took like a year of 2D animation and did some drawings and took some art classes. But I came to the realization after quite a while that drawing wasn't really my strong suit and it isn't something that I could probably make a career out of. So that convinced me, all right, if I'm going to enter the game industry, it would have to be as a programmer. And DigiPen fit the goals I want in terms of trying to get my foot into the industry.
Right. And do you actually have like an artistic background? Did you study art in high school or college? Did you draw pictures when you were a kid? Yeah. What was your background there?
I mean, I took some drawing classes, but they were in high school. They were like elective courses. And I actually took an elective course while I was in college when I was studying computer science, but it wasn't something that I was into hardcore, because I realized later on that if you want to be a good artist, it's something that you have to work on every single day, just drawing. You have to draw like every waking hour of your life if you wanted to get really good at it. And it was something cool to learn, but again, if I wanted to make a career out of it, I would have to devote a lot more time than I really wanted to do. And you know, I like computer programming, and so I stuck with it. It didn't compel me to like abandon it and go into art. I just decided, hey, I'm pretty good at computer programming, so I stuck with that.
Yeah, I think that was kind of weird, because it's like I don't think I've ever spoken with anyone who's actually found computer programming interesting once they actually started to do it. It's usually a thing of like all throughout my life, there have been people who have been like, hey, we should make a game. Hey, let's get started. Someone's got to do programming. Let me try and learn it. Oh, wow. Fuck that shit. Hell no. And it's just like, I don't know anyone who enjoys being a programmer. I do know some people who have done it because they have to, or because they did it to like get a job and then kind of stuck with it for a while. But usually, like, once you get past web design and you start really getting hardcore into C++ or, well, I mean, that's what was big back then, was C and C++. But past that, it's just like, I don't know anyone that likes it. I certainly don't like it. I'm terrible at it. I'm not good enough at math to do that or even comprehend it. But yeah, I would have stuck with the drawing.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting how I stumbled with computer science, because I was actually was thinking of majoring in math, and then I took intensive calculus 1 and 2 during my freshman year, and I said, I don't want to do this anymore. This is terrible. This is horrible. And a friend told me, oh, you should take this computer programming class. And I said, but I don't know anything about computer programming. It's like, the intro class isn't that bad. You should be able to do fine. And I took it, and it was kind of fun, like building your own programs. I think the moment that I really started getting into it was for, I think it was like a data, like, no, it was a computer systems class or something like that. And that I took in my junior year, and one of the assignments, you actually were tasked to make a game. So I ended up making a very, very simple wrestling game in assembly language, and which you couldn't really do much with assembly, because it's all machine code, and you know, you can't pump out any graphics. But I set it up so that I created the graphics using just like rudimentary pixels, and had like two random number generators, one for you and one for the opponent. And you had a list of wrestling moves that you could pick. You pick one, and then throws the two random numbers, and whoever had the higher number gets to execute their wrestling move. And as the match goes on, you have access to stronger and stronger wrestling moves, and you keep on going until you either tire the guy out and you pin him, or the opponent pins you. And that was, I mean, I spent a lot of hours just programming that, but it was a lot of fun, and I'd stuck with it.
I remember doing the, what was it? It was like way back, I think it was like Visual Basic in, I want to say elementary school. No, it was probably middle school, probably early middle school, where it's like you make the two apes where there's one on each side and they throw bananas at each other, and you're just trying to like blow up the buildings and knock them down. That was like as far as I've ever gotten with programming. Like I did that. I did TI-85. Anything past that was like, nope, not even getting into this.
Yeah, I did a lot of work in BASIC when I was in grade school. Like I read all the books on how to make your own video games out of BASIC, and I would read all those. I would make my own little trivia programs. You know, I put together like a rudimentary like submarine game with like a joystick, but I never really progressed that far beyond basic.
Yeah, red book, Oh Basic, probably in elementary school as well, that I got from the library and just never gave back. I'm a thief, don't tell anybody. And I think the best thing I did out of that was it had a bunch of pre-made games, but from that I got an idea of what I could do, and you know, the if-then statements and all that other wonderful stuff, and I would always take the already made games and put my friends' names in it, and it was like my own choose your own adventure. That's as much as I ever did with it.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
I guess I'm the only lazy one, because even speaking of wrestling games or sports games, when they have the general manager mode or something where you get to like toy around and fix people's stats, and I just had no interest in any of that stuff. I just want to shoot things and, you know, break things. But it's interesting that that a lot of us tooled around with that stuff, and it's cool that you actually made a living out of it. I guess I would love to make a living making games if I weren't lazy. So hats off to you.
I went to college in Georgia Tech, and I did programming for a few years, and it just I got C, C++, Java. I mean, this was a few years ago, but I mean, once I started getting really into it, you would spend hours just working on something that was so small and basic. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't anything incredibly fancy. You're just doing some simple program, but you would just sit there for hours, and then when it finally worked, when it compiled and worked, you were proud. It was really cool, but it's like, do I really want to put hours and hours of work into some, you know, I don't know. Like, when you're writing a book, when you write something, it's just you and the words, and you write something and you get a finished result very quickly. It's very easy to put your thoughts across, but the programming just felt like it was such a huge gap between your thoughts.
How many novels have you written?
Yeah.
It's so easy. Tell Stephen King it's easy.
Well, I'm not saying it's easy to do something successful, obviously something good. I'm just saying it's very easy to
create a finished product and have it like as you
right.
figured.
Let's say
be.
Even if it's shit, you know, at least you can actually get it from your mind and onto the paper in
the
one step. There's one step.
Product.
There isn't like you have to convert it to. I mean, it would just take so long.
You've got to have someone do graphics. You've got to have someone.
So I just had this image of myself
models.
Doing programming like 20 hours a day, you know, working overtime, and I'm like, that's not what I want to do. This is not what I want to do with my life, and I stopped. So
I have a question about that. Sort of dovetails into what Nick talked about as well, like looking through the credits and finding your name on something. Jonathan, do you feel like you can actually? I know you just started at this, but do you feel like you have a tangible product that you're working on or do you feel like you're just stuck working on one really obscure part of the game that? Such that you don't really feel like you're building anything.
No, at least in terms of my work, and also trying to figure out what I can and can't say. Because we're a small team, you take ownership of certain things in the game. Granted, some of the things may be something that. Won't be seen by the players, like it'd be more for the internal team. But I mean, you take pride in what you own, and you try to make it better. Because if you took something that, like, you know, this thing used to work, but we did this update to the game and it's broken, it'd be really nice if we could have this back, because it would make like our jobs easier. Let's say like the QA team, and you go and you work on it and you improve it, and they say, hey, great, like, this makes our job a lot easier. I mean, there's even for the things that, like, that's not apparent to the player, you can still get satisfaction, especially if it helps out your other team members.
No, good enough. So you feel like you do contribute in a valid way to what you're doing. The only reason I say that is because, yeah, I don't mean to shout, but the only reason I say that is because I remember with the old days when people would put games together, it was always like one or two guys putting the entire game together. And now these now video games are such a huge industry that they involve so many, like hundreds of people seemingly, with the biggest games out there, that it almost seems like the game business, at least from my perspective, has become just very like segmented and specialized. But you still feel like you're contributing to a valid product.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. I definitely feel that. Again, part of it is because we have, our team isn't as big as the teams you just alluded to. So you have, you're responsible for more things than say, you're the technical artist and you have to make this can look awesome in the game. So it's a, but again, it all depends on the size of the team. I mean, if you're working on a big blockbuster game with the 50, 100 man teams, you could be put in the situation where you're just working on just this like one little thing. The smaller the team, I would say the more pride you feel, but just because you're responsible for more things, you feel like you have a much stronger connection than working on the 50 to 100 man team projects.
Cool, very cool. Well, earlier this year, Jonathan, you had posted a thread in our forum about bad UI in games, bad user interference in games, and this is something that I think about a lot. And this is something you know about and have thought about. I don't know if anyone briefed you ahead of time that we were going to talk about this.
I thought I
mentioned it to you because you posted about it.
No, I got home a little late, but I did see the thread. And I did do some research because a couple months ago, I was actually one of the jobs that I was applying to was at Bungie, and they had a UI engineer position. So one of the things I did was part of the reason why I actually started that thread was to see, like, hey, what are some, like, excellent examples of bad UI in games? And I actually stumbled upon, like, this PDF study. It was called Beyond the HUD. And it talked about, like, the UI systems that were implemented in recent games, like in the Mirror's Edge and Left 4 Dead and Crysis 2. So, yeah, it is something that think about, because good UI system is something that you don't really think much about. It just works. Bad UI, everyone's gonna make a note of it. So you definitely, when you're working on the game, you really want to make sure that one of the things that people don't talk about is how bad your UI is, just because it's just so apparent and it can detract from the gameplay.
Yeah, this is something that I think about a lot. I think two of the better examples I can think of just right off the bat is Metal Gear Solid and Resident Evil, just like the first couple Resident Evils, because that's where I stopped following the series. And with Metal Gear Solid, I remember when I first played it, I was really impressed by the interface and how easily everything worked and the way you could switch weapons really easily by using the shoulder buttons. And I remember when I first played it was when I first got a PlayStation, so it was really my first exposure to the console, and I thought how effective the interface was, because you very rarely had to just hit the pause button to just interrupt the action. You could just very easily switch to whatever you wanted just by using all the buttons. The other example, like the bad example, I think would be Resident Evil, and at least Resident Evil 2. Those are the ones that I remember, where you always had to, whenever you wanted to do anything with your inventory, you always had to call up the inventory screen. You had to, it was really slow. There was no like direct connection to the action. It always took you out, always interrupted play, and that just really irritated me. I thought that was a bad, like a good example of a bad user interface.
That was particularly bad for that game, because that Resident Evil is based on getting you into that environment, and it's kind of sucking you in so that, you know, when the window shatters to your left, you know, it startles you because you're so into looking at what's around the corner. And, mm-hmm. and then, you know, when you get hurt and you got to combine the green with the red and, that's kind of unfortunate. Because you spend so much time in the menus that it takes you out of the scene. If you see all the crows up lined ahead and you're thinking, are they going to attack me? When you pause and then you switch weapons, it takes you out of that moment.
And, really? Yeah, I love Resident Evil 1 and 2. And
I did 3. Too. I love, especially so, 2. I loved it.
I don't know. I didn't feel like the inventory was that big a deal. Well, I mean, I would rather the action. Well, I would rather the action pause when I'm going through my inventory and combining things and doing things than things keep going. Or
but in a horror movie, you're trying to load your gun and your hands are trembling. You know, something that gets you closer to that would be preferable rather than just saying, okay, I'm going to pause it. I get as much time as I want. This is survival horror. And
well, think of Left 4 Dead. I mean, I know it's a completely different type of game, but the inventory is all done on the D-pad.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I don't think you had that many buttons like that. You're talking about Resident Evil 1. There wasn't even an analog stick when this game came out.
That's true. Now we have the D-pad.
D-pad is superfluous. The D-pad is like, oh, here's 4 more buttons. You know, who cares? So it's a little different, I think. I don't know. I guess the Metal Gear is a good example because you can just hold down the shoulder buttons and go through your inventory very quickly. And it just kind of grays out the action and puts a little overlay, you know, and everything stops for a second. You switch to your stuff. You let go of the buttons, you're back into it very, very quickly. So that is a good example of a very nice menu system. But I can't fault Resident Evil for what it did. I mean, you can reload outside of in combat itself. It's a lot slower, but you can do it. I like the box. I'm a fan of
the menu in Resident Evil was a little weird for that, like for reloading, because if you went into your menu, if you paused the game and mm-hmm. reloaded, it was instant.
Right.
But if you did it in game, then it would take forever. Right, so it was
don't do it in game.
Yeah, it was really beneficial to pause the game and just do magic reloads. The one thing about the Resident Evil UI that did stick with me for a long time and took me a while to kind of get used to, which I thought was interesting, was the really imprecise life meter. Because most games...
I don't like that yet.
Yeah, like most games have you have 10 bars of health, a hit takes off 2 bars. Resident Evil is just like... red, green, like beating faster. It's like if I use this, like sometimes, you know, you use a, plant, like a green herb, and it may send you back into green, or it might not. And it's like, oh, you were just hurt that much, but you have no idea.
And you also had like the character would grab himself and kind of drag his foot around when he was really hurt. So you had different stages of how healthy he was. Right. You had like visual cues, which is an interesting thought. But to be honest, I want hit points. I want a health bar. I want to know exactly how much health I have.
I respectfully disagree. Going back to what I was saying before.
I want everything. I don't care.
Going back to what I was saying before, the appeal of horror is that you just don't know. It's not mm-hmm. knowing something. Not knowing what's around the corner. Not knowing what that thing you found does or if it's even important. And just not knowing if that next encounter with, you know, you a dog bit you before and you were fine, but now you're on yellow. Is the dog bite going to kill you? It's kind of more realistic in that regard, and I think it did help the series. And I even like the way that you couldn't just turn around quickly. You had that whole production where you pressed up to go forward, and then you had to spiral around because
the tank controls.
Lack of 180 ticked me off to no end.
It kind of fit in that universe, I think.
Well,
this is the thing about that series is that there's a lot to complain about. I mean, I love the games. I play them. You know, once you learn the game and you start saving up your ammo and actually playing it right, then you can get through the game very easily. There's not a lot that ends up destroying you. You can use special ammo for every single hunter. You know, like nothing will ever come close to killing you. They're very controlled games, so you can get used to them and you can do very well, especially the remake, which is probably the greatest Resident Evil game of all time. And the thing is, there's a lot to complain about, the controls, the interface and all that, but now we're kind of talking Resident Evil more than UI in general, but I feel like it did a lot wrong, but that all these wrong elements somehow work to the game's advantage in a very weird way.
But now...
Because when Resident Evil 4 came out, I was not a big fan. Everybody was like, this game is so much better. there was a huge shift towards action, I feel, because now you're just doing whatever the hell you want. You're killing a lot of enemies. They're dropping ammo as they die. The whole mechanic of the game just changed completely. It's a lot faster.
Resident Evil defined a style. There was a Resident Evil style. When mm-hmm. you said Resident Evil controls, people kind of knew what you were talking about, the tank controls. And I guess that's important in a way, because if they just had done the same kinds of controls and the same kind of UI as everybody else was doing, I think that would have taken away from the uniqueness of the experience and what I was saying before, the terror of not knowing what's going to happen and being in an alien environment where you're not confident. You're not confident you can hit and run and it's going to be okay. You're thinking, man, if I get too close, I might not have time to spin around and get out of there. And that one green herb I have might be enough, not be enough to do it. And what the hell does this spray do anyway? You know, you're cast into that alien environment. And that was, I think that kind of added, it was maybe like a small percentage of the appeal of that game, but it was important to it. And I'm glad they did do that. Is it important to have a unique interface or just find what's good and then have games reproduce that ad nauseum? I mean, it's good to have your own thing sometimes.
Well, what works for like a quick action game may not work for a slower paced game, because Resident Evil was a slower paced game in general. It was more about the setup, the suspense, and the exploration, and danger constantly lurking over you. You could die at any time, that kind of feeling. And I kind of feel like it's lost that recently, and now it's more of an action. You run, you shoot. Cool. And you know what was weird? In 4, people were like, oh, the controls are so much better in 4. But you know what? 4 still has the tank controls. It just has a more dynamic camera because of the 3D environment. It has like the aiming system, which wasn't there before, and basically unlimited bullets from enemies. But the controls, the basic walking around controls, are just as tanky as they ever were. I don't see the difference.
And yeah, 4 compared they are to, exactly like, the 1, same. 2.
You can't even look. You can't strafe. I mean, 5 changed it with the strafing.
But it was, I guess it was kind of like that either or thing, like with the fixed camera. Like I kind of mm-hmm. hate the tank controls with the fixed camera, but yeah. with the dynamic camera, it works better. Whereas, you know, if you've got the fixed camera, but you have more of that Devil May Cry or Onimusha style or whatever. I think right. Onimusha had like
Onimusha
that same...
was Resident Evil, yeah.
Was it Resident Evil? Okay, I can't remember. It's been so long since I played them. But yeah, like I think that worked to a good extent. But more importantly, I think the UI, with Resident Evil being as popular as it is, and it kind of aiming for a more... I guess a slightly more realistic UI, like other games had done stuff like that before, but I think that also helped continue to push the cinematic feeling of games as graphics were improving too.
Mm-hmm.
Just overall, like pushing more games into having less UI splattered all over the screen.
Yeah.
And just giving like a kind of a more general feel and more visual cues, like what you were talking about.
I think the remake is perfect. It's like a perfect blend of the old and the new. I love the remake on the GameCube so much. It's such a gorgeous game. And it's so methodical, too. It's like, you know, it's the old Resident Evil style 100% of the way, and I just love that game. I don't know.
I mentioned Metal Gear a minute ago. I wanted to talk about something that I saw yesterday, the trailer for the Metal Gear Rising.
Yes.
Revengeance.
Exciting
game, which apparently showed at the Spike Video Game Awards. I don't know if any of you guys watched that, but
just so interesting.
This trailer came out, and I thought it was absolutely amazing, and I want to talk a little bit about it. Have all of you guys seen this trailer?
Yes.
No, I avoid trailers.
I know that Chuck has.
You avoid trailers with spoilers?
I have to put them up for on TNL once in a while, but I generally try to avoid them.
Why?
Because, I don't know, I like being surprised. We talked about this in a previous podcast.
We talked about this during the
movie. I was surprised by the trailer. I wasn't expecting what I saw. That was good enough.
I'd rather have a bigger surprise when I'm playing than a smaller surprise on YouTube.
Well, anyways,
I say dismissively.
TV, so there.
Shall I just
let's all ruin this game for Nick now?
For our listeners.
God, Revengeance looks amazing. I mean, even without the trailer, I was already completely sold on it because I thought it looked okay before. And then with Platinum attached, I mean, Like, Platinum is just amazing. I mean, after Bayonetta, well, okay, Mad World is not that great. It's okay in small doses, but it's a kind of shitty overall game.
It's a score attack game, basically, that goes on for way too long. It's like, right, try to get a high score, issue. It but goes the level's on for going too on long. For a year, and you're like, oh, come on.
Yeah. Right, like, they just have you run back and forth across the same level. If they had taken that exact same design, right as it was, and given it a more traditional run-through-the-level style and made it score attack, it probably would have been fantastic. But it's just this weird arena feel that doesn't... It's just like you get locked in a room and fight enemies. Okay, get locked in the next room and fight enemies. Like, it's not very interesting.
That's kind of a precursor to what was that game? Bulletstorm, a little bit, where you have all those killing combinations that end up with
Yeah. Kills. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but whatever, right. Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, no, but after, like, Bayonetta and... I can't believe I'm blanking on the other game right now. Vanquish, yes. Like, both of those games, absolutely fucking incredible. They are so good that even though I think their next game, that four-player fighting game, only looks mildly okay, I still kind of want to buy it just on their pedigree so far. But still, like, moving back to a single-player action game, like, they're like the best developer this generation at that.
Yeah.
They're so good. And all the little things they do just makes it absolutely incredible. Like, Bayonetta just kind of ruined me for so many other action games, for enjoying them for a strictly gameplay standpoint. I mean, stuff like being able to dodge in 360 degrees. So many other games that have a dodge button will still, to this day, they'll use the analog stick, but you only move in four directions. I can't even figure out, like, why they would do that. Like, you're using a 360 degrees... for four ways. There doesn't seem to be a point to that. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, with Bayonetta, like, it's just you push a button. That's it. Like, it's an instant dodge. Like, they don't even have block. I usually don't like blocking in games, in really fast action games, because everything is so quick that blocking just kind of seems to slow it down. Like, you end up in a kind of stalemate where an enemy is attacking you. You can't attack. You probably don't have a defense against that. They're starting to get past that. More games are implementing instant guards and things like that, where you defend at the very last moment and gain an opening. But for the most part, like in something like God of War, you attack, and then you block for a while, and then you attack. But there's no real like fast defense that keeps up in a quick pace. And Bayonetta just does that in spades, and it's so great. I love it. I'm just going to sit here and jack off to it for a while. Mm-hmm. But that, and then, and then Vanquish, which was like, hey, let's take Gears of War and just crank it up to, like, twice the normal speed and give it score attack and make it completely about, like, I don't remember what the technique is, but it's this weird kind of bunny hopping, which lets you boost forever. Because it's just like you're tapping boost and keeping your character on the ground, but making him like pop up every second or so, so you don't actually trigger your meter. And it's weird little classic kind of glitches like that that are in there that just it makes it work so well. Like when you actually watch high skill play, because I put a good amount of time into it. I played through it on whatever the hardest difficulty was that it comes with. Not knowing that you could pop in a code to get God hard right from the start. But still, it was just like, it was a good game, it was really well balanced, and it plays absolutely amazing. I love it.
Very nice.
Right,
yes.
Right.
and now they're taking over Metal Gear. And they're taking a game.
So let me just ask, let me see if I can...
What?
What?
Oh.
Then Eric was gone forever.
His cat jumped him.
So here's my thing. People think that it's going to have a better story now that Platinum is taking it over. Have you played a Platinum game?
Why would you think that? Yeah. What do you did you play Bayonetta? That's stupid.
Did you play Vanquish? Vanquish was, oh my god, the Russians have a laser satellite and they're shooting people.
Okay, yeah.
Quick, let's throw ships at them.
At least Vanquish had a narrative. A narrative that you could follow without being demented, whereas Bayonetta actively was confusing at all times, kind of.
Okay, well, then true I guess, story.
I guess Platinum is a better.
Bayonetta, I couldn't really figure out who the baby girl was. I couldn't figure out if that was, I think that her, was her daughter or her.
It is her. I think that's her.
This is her first abuse for a while.
I don't know. Let's talk about Bayonetta. Fuck everything else. We're done. We're going to talk about Bayonetta now.
She's the eyes of the world.
I like.
Hey, what's up, guys? I guess I'm back.
Hey, Eric. Hey, did you know that when you start a sentence, you start it really freaking loud? Like when someone's done talking, you're like, "Hey, we're back!" And then you like scream, and it kills me every time a little bit inside.
Nick, I just want to take point that out. That little section of his recording, make that just add in commercial breaks.
Anyway, I remember people complaining about the like Bayonetta saying that it was like a sexualization of women and that kind
of
stuff. But
sexualization
it's like, no.
Of women.
Well, I don't know how to say it. It was exploitative of women. Yeah, like exploitation. But it's like this isn't the kind of sexy that's geared towards men. Where it's like, check out my boobs, dudes. You know, I'm so dumb and I want to sleep with you. It's like it's completely the opposite. It's like super hyper sexed, but it's almost in an empowering way, not in a hey dudes, come here and fuck me way. It's like I'm crazy and I'm Bayonetta, and you know I don't give a fuck about anything else.
Yeah, I think part
it's
of it
completely
was like,
the opposite of that.
Her clothes come off or her special moves, but the thing is they never actually show anything.
Yeah.
Like it actually happens in combat, but it's so fast that unless you're looking for it, you won't see it.
In case you haven't
but it'll
game,
happen
her
like
hair,
cinematic kills.
Yeah. Her clothes are her hair. Her hair is her clothing. She has giant magical hair that she wraps around her body, and it looks like clothes, but then when she's attacking, she needs the hair to turn into giant monsters that bite things in half. Or giant boots that step on things. And while she's using it for that purpose, she can't use it to cover her naked body anymore. So the bigger the attacks you do, the nakeder she gets. But it's always done tastefully, in a way. As tastefully as Bayonetta can be.
Why doesn't she just wear clothes under her hair?
Shut up, Nick. Because the game is amazing.
Who would do that?
Because
this is made
greatest.
By the Japanese. Deal with it.
I see, okay.
Yeah. Now, it's actually, just... on a kind of related to that, I've been playing El Shaddai. And what's funny is it's kind of like Bayonetta in that regard, because you start off with armor, and as the armor breaks, kind of like Ghosts and Goblins.
Okay.
It, like, he just loses his clothes all the time, and so it's like you start off with this guy who's, you know, from head to toe in full armor, just like, I'm ready to take on this army, and then, like, halfway through a fight, he's just like, all I'm wearing are my jeans, all my armor's off, it's just beefcake time.
Then they
Everyone.
Drop some oil on his chest by accident, and he's like, oh no, what is this? And he's rubbing it all over. Okay, sorry.
Like, get it off, get it off. But no, yeah.
Like the old Gladiator arcade game that I used to play every freaking day at 7-Eleven. Where,
oh, I love that game. Gladiator, that was great.
Yeah, I don't even recall who made it, but I used to play that every day. Was, not to see the guy's chest armor come off. But
did you oil yourself when you play?
Yeah, that was classic. So, wow, we were talking about Metal Gear. We're talking about Bayonetta. We're talking about user interfaces. Do we still have Jonathan here?
I'm still here.
Yeah? Jonathan, you want to contribute to our discussion of all of this stuff?
Well, I love Bayonetta, so I'm pretty excited that Platinum is involved in Revengeance, which is another awesome name.
Which is a mix of the words revenge and vengeance.
It's, oh, is that what it is?
Thoughts of vengeance again, yeah.
Yeah, because the idea of vengeance, yeah, I don't really get that across with just the word
vengeance.
That's why
I
think
vengeance,
mix it with revenge.
It's not revenge-y enough.
If you watch the trailer, the tagline was revenge with a vengeance. That's what they're going
right,
for.
Yeah.
So it's vengeance. So.
Wasn't there a Sega CD game called Revengers of Vengeance or something? Or what was that?
I hope that's real.
It's something very similar to
like
that.
Blockbuster?
Google it.
Yeah,
it was at
our local video store. Let me see. You guys can keep talking while I figure this out. There was something very close to that.
Bated breath. Look it up. Okay. But yeah, so they've got that, and I don't know. Like, one of the things which I thought was kind of interesting about the new trailer was that they seem to have sped up the speed with which that you can cut things up. And I don't know if there's like a loss of control or if they're just making a
Put
different kind of special move. Because
it goes into connect mode, and then you get to flail your arms around.
You put your hands up and rotate them, like on screen. Because it was like in the first trailer, it was like really like, okay, you fight this guy, and then it's like real slow, like, oh, I'm gonna put this cut here.
Well, do you mean like the Konami trailer?
Here. the very first, when it was Konami just, you trailer. Know, Metal Gear Rising. Yeah.
Because they worked on it in-house in Konami, and they only came up with the concept of cutting things, and they never actually like got any further than that. And so there was an initial, we did see the game when Konami was working in it, and then it was like, cut up this watermelon, and it's like, ooh, check it out. And then this is a completely different build. This is nothing. This is very little to do with that. It's just
And this one, like, I think there was a brief scene in that trailer where you could actually see the kind of the remnants of that control, where he was just he like cut some soldier into a couple pieces, but you could see him actually like layering the cuts and putting them like where the player might want them to be. But all the rest were like hyperkinetic. Holy shit! Now this guy is in like 100 different pieces.
Right. This needs to be like Ninja Turtles, where everything you fight has to be a robot, because you are cutting the shit out of these things. There is no way that these can be people or real things.
It would seem like
you'd be able to cut everybody.
Oh my god, like you are cutting so nasty.
To tie this back into a circle, when he was actually sitting there, like, carving the guy when he was doing that hyper special move and cutting him into 100 pieces, the first thing that popped in my head was the first Resident Evil movie. Where the laser grid.
Yeah.
Best special effect in that movie.
You know what? That movie could have been so much better. I mean, obviously, it could have been so much better, but if they had worked the angle of the crazy AI being a little red girl-looking thing, you know what I mean? Like, that's such an interesting concept to me right there. Because I like little girls. No, really, because it is such an interesting concept. And they actually, I mean, they barely even touched on that movie could have been so much better than it was, but whatever.
So yeah, to contribute my own tangent, yeah, 2D fighting game 1994 on the Sega CD, developed by Micronet and published by Extreme Entertainment Group, which I'm sure both companies went out of business soon after this. Revengers of Vengeance.
That's an amazing track it down on eBay. For anything.
The more you know.
Wow. Part two, the revenge.
The revenge of the Revengers of Vengeance.
Oh my god.
The Vengeful Revenge of the Revengers of Vengeance.
Why was this not a series? This could have been the greatest series ever.
Why don't we just
settle into what we've been playing at this point in the podcast. And should we have Jonathan start?
Sure.
All right. Yeah,
well. Do it.
So, early this week, I started Bastion, because it was $5 on Steam.
Nice. And,
good cause.
So far, so good, and really love the art style, and didn't get very far, but I like what I play so far, so it's definitely $5 well spent. And then, last night, I actually met up with Yeller Dog and Mark Ryan, and we went to this place in San Francisco called the Musée Mécanique, which is basically a penny arcade. So there was like a whole bunch of like really, really old games. Like they had one where it was like test your strength, where you had to like bring these two bullhorns together. Like it was just basically a strength test. Yeller and I got like the same score, and then Mark Ryan used his leverage to his advantage, and he beat us by like about 30 points. And Death Race was actually on display, so that was
pretty
to see.
Seen that game.
Yeah, so basically a black and white screen. You drive a car around, and there's just two people like running around the screen. There's this like safe zone on the left and right side of the screen, so you can't hit them when they're inside the safe zone, but once they're out in the field, you can just like drive and like just crash right into them. And when you do, they up comes a tombstone right where they are. and then what you have to do is you have to
Oregon Trail.
Yeah. And then you have to there's also like a lever that goes from reverse to and forward, so you actually have to like reset the car in order to move again after you hit someone. And what's interesting is that as you start killing more and more folks, like you have more tombstones all on the field, so it's kind of harder to navigate, because as soon as you hit into a tombstone, it just kills your momentum. So really, really interesting to see the infamous piece of arcade history out in display. So, Yeah, those are a few of the things that we saw in the Penny Arcade, but the Death Race machine was probably the most interesting.
Right on. Good times. Good times. I guess I'll go next. Unless there's anything else you've been playing, or is that it?
That's it for now.
Is that it? Is it wrap it up? Okay. This week I've been playing more Dark Souls, which will not be a surprise to anyone listening to this podcast.
100 years of Dark Souls, call it.
100, making it 100 years. This is the century of Dark Souls.
Dark Souls League out of college.
I made it to Anor Londo. So for those of you who know anything about the game,
that's my drug dealer.
It's to you, yeah. but I can come back to that in a second. But I've also been playing the new firmware update. Check out the new firmware update on the 3DS, which includes Find Me 2, which Find Me, of course, is the little built-in RPG that comes with every 3DS. The firmware update has added a sequel to this game, which how many of you guys have – Chuck, have you had a chance to play Find Me game on your 3DS yet?
I'm like on the fifth screen of that because, again, I have nobody – to help me out, so I've got to shake my 3DS and get the coins, and then I get these level 2 guys, and they're all like, "Oh, we're the worst," and they die, and I hate my life. But I'm on the way.
Okay. I did it. I finished it off again. Like my friend and I went to an anime convention that happened in Chicago. We didn't actually attend; we just sat in the lobby of the main hotel, and we went through. We got all the puzzle pieces, and then we went through all of Find Me at least once through with just the people who were walking by. So that was pretty exciting. I'm restarting my 3DS right now. I didn't even know there was an update until you mentioned it. So,
yeah. Well, Find Me it's a new game. Well, it's very similar to the old game. Instead of just having like a image of you kidnapped by these little monsters as the king, this time the king gets kidnapped along with the king's son and daughter, the prince and the princess. Both of which look exactly like you, which is just a little bit creepy. They have like little matching wigs to denote the fact that one of them is male and one of them is female. So they all get captured. And this time around, there's branching paths. There's like 57 new hats.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so there's like a ton. I've already got an R-Wing hat. I've unlocked a pirate hat. And I think those are the two that I've gotten so far. I think there was one other one. But yeah, just a shit ton of hats. And plus, what you can do for Find Me 2 is you can actually pay coins to recruit Street Pass friends that you've already encountered. So if you just want to like a particular colored friend in order to get past a particular challenge.
That's racist.
What? Racist?
Yeah.
Well, everyone wears a different color shirt, and the different color shirts give you different magical spells that you can use once, just to get that out of the way.
Just to give everybody a little bit of context for what I'm talking about. So, yeah, you can easily do that. And this – I actually learned this listening to another podcast the other day. Apparently, if you keep street passing the same people, they'll level up on Find Me, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So you can just pay coins to recruit that person if they're more powerful than the other ones. So that's a pretty handy thing. So lots more hats, lots more customization, lots more things to do with your Street Pass coins as you accumulate them while carrying your 3DS around with you wherever you go. So that was pretty nice. I did like that. And yeah, that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it for me this week. I did play a little bit of Shinobi also on the 3DS. I got back into that, which is still a great game.
Did you think you put in Dark Souls by accident?
Yeah, it was the strangest thing. Like, I was trying to find Dark Souls. Like, well, no, there's not much chance of that because that's pretty much stuck in my Xbox. So that never comes out. But, yeah. I guess that's pretty much it. Chuck, you want to tell us what you've been playing?
Yeah, sure. I played a little more Assassin's Creed, did some more single player. Not too much going on with that. I beat Saints Row since the last time we talked. I got the good ending, if you want to call it that. So that was fun. I miscalculated my hours of playing. I looked at it, and it was only 11 hours when I was all said and done. Again, I did not touch any of the side quests. I did only the bare minimum to, you know, get the game done. But a lot of fun. Would definitely buy it since all I did was rent it. Because again, I haven't even touched co-op, so I'm sure with a game like that, I like to mess around and have people in like cars and just run them off cliffs and into buildings and all kinds of stupid stuff. So it'd be a lot of fun. Been playing a lot of Mario Land 3DS. It's a lot of fantastic fun. I love it a lot. I'm really surprised how well the 3D works.
Yeah.
Saying a lot. I've become self-aware. No, but I'm playing a lot of that.
Skynet.
I know, right? Shoot.
Yeah.
And what else? The dashboard preview for the 360 is still going for people who were in the dashboard preview. So last night I got to watch the UFC event for free, and I don't really watch that kind of stuff, but I'll say okay to free. So that was neat. It's the same thing as the ESPN app, if you've ever used that. You get to pick who's going to beat whose ass. So that's fun. That's about it, I think. Yeah, right not on, too much this right week.
On. Chris, you want to take it away?
All right.
Chris Rubin.
There were pretty much three main things I played this week. First off, I've been playing a bunch of El Shaddai, as I mentioned earlier. And that is, I know I heard a lot of complaints about the game, but I can't even remember what they were. I think it might have been about the platforming, or maybe the action just wasn't that great. And, I mean, I really don't have any issues with either of them. It is a gorgeous game, though. The design in it is just, it's fantastic, like the way they use the textures. And they, like, layer the backgrounds. There are times where, aside from the character models, like, it's just straight up looks like a kind of an interactive piece of art. It's beautiful. Everything about it is absolutely gorgeous. The action, I find completely serviceable. Like, it's not amazing, but it's well done enough that I really don't have an issue with it. The only real problem I have is that they give you three different types of weapons, but there's no manual way to switch between these weapons. You just have to hope that an enemy shows up with the weapon you want so that you can steal it from them and then continue on.
About,
so
talk about bad
interface. That's a little janky. Yeah, because it's like with one weapon, you get this float ability for jumping, which can be helpful for platforming sessions, but that's tied to the weapon.
Yeah.
So if you have one of the other two weapons, guess what? Better be good at platforming, which isn't too bad because it's real easy to just keep it and retry. It's tough to, like, I probably should have, I really should have picked hard for my first time through because this game's a lot easier than I was expecting it to be. But even then, like, it's so simple to just blow your way through it. I'm not sure how far I am. I'm probably like halfway through, but I like it. It's good. The other one I'm playing is, well, one of the other two I'm playing, is I'm going through Enslaved right now, and I think I'm about two-thirds of the way through it, maybe only halfway through, somewhere around that. And it's definitely a little bit better than I was expecting it to be. It's a, you know, adventurous cinematic romp, so it strikes me as vaguely like Uncharted in that way, where it's much more about the characters and kind of the cutscenes and all that, as opposed to being real stringently focused on the gameplay. Because, like, the platforming in that game is real loose. It's just that kind of, you guide him. And even what Mizzou was saying before about Uncharted, which is that the main character, Monkey, his ability to go from platform to platform will change based on what, you know, the script requires him to be able to jump. He just kind of flies between them, whatever. But it's nice. It flows really well. One thing which is kind of interesting is that the action is actually, despite it being a monkey character fighting robots, it's more realistic than Uncharted because he's not a complete sociopath murdering hundreds of people. It's like there's like a huge element about stealth. Like,
it's not a crazy intrusive element, but it's that sort of thing of, hey, we can actually just walk around these guys and not slaughter all of these things or fight only when we're called to. And there's not a huge amount of action. It's much more just about the journey. So it's like I think I just reached a part where I had to fight probably about 20 or 30 enemies. And it was the first time in maybe 5-6 hours of gameplay that I've had to fight that many things. It's usually just like 3 or 4 things and then you move on and that's it. So yeah, it's a little bit weird, but the pacing's good. So it's enjoyable in that regard. And I like it. And the character designs, like the designs of the world are really nice. I do think it's a pretty good, Journey from the West adaptation.
It's an interesting setting, and then the because last thing, it's kind of like that Discovery Channel, well, it was a book first, but the Discovery Channel documentary of that showed what would happen if the human race died out, and then...
Oh, Life Without People.
Yeah, Life Without People. And you're going through this setting where you're going through these abandoned cities. I think you go through New York or some big city, these abandoned places, and there's greenery overtaking
it. Yeah, it's New York.
And I thought that was a pretty interesting setting. And then the Andy Serkis, the Smeagol guy from Lord of the Rings, I guess he'll always be the Smeagol guy. He does the monkey's facial expressions and his voice, I guess. And he does that really well. And there's a relationship. You're tied to a woman that you have to take with you. And it's explained because you're tied to her. You can't go far from her. Or something will happen. You have a helmet strapped to you, and it'll kill you if you go too far. But I thought even that was handled well because there's not this sappy romantic tension. There's not these like little one-liners. It's played pretty seriously, even though this guy's like not your average looking fella, and it's not your average looking situation. But it's played very seriously, and I think it's a very effective setting, and the story really drew me in. And, you don't have a ton of things flying at you. It's not a super high-action game, but
yeah,
it's more about it just unfolding it in front of you and seeing where you go next.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's definitely nice. I did think that they handled that a lot better than I was really expecting them to. I mean, just the writing for the girl as well. I thought it was actually handled pretty well.
pretty
she's,
girl.
She's definitely scared in the situation, but she's not ridiculous.
I like her. She has boobs.
But she's not ridiculously stupid. She does help out every once in a while. She goes a little nuts, but
that's the thing. She helps.
It's not
you,
bad.
It's
like
it's
everything
real,
at least seems to play out kind of logical. Yeah.
She helps you realistically. She's not
like
a
she
warrior.
Needs him, and she actually.
In any other game, in any other. I'm sorry, you're lagging a little, so I think I'm talking over you.
Yeah.
But in any other game, or maybe like Gears of War, when you have male characters and female characters, they go to extra lengths to say, you know, everybody's equally adept at being a warrior, and this one's a little faster, and this one's a little stronger, and whatever. But she does have a vulnerability, and even he has kind of a vulnerability, but it's not not physically. But she's vulnerable. She's kind of a meat sack that goes along with you, and really you would love to get rid of her in a way. But she does have certain things that she can help you with, and you are kind of escorting her, but she never really becomes a burden. You never really have to worry about her. She's not stupid like a lot of characters are, but at the same time she's not, you're equal in combat, so you do need to protect her, and you can't leave her. But it never becomes tiresome. I think the game is very balanced in a lot of different ways that I was very impressed with. And even though we'll probably never get a sequel, I think I would love to see one. The action is probably better in an Uncharted, the jumping action. But overall, as a story and something you can really get into, I think Enslaved is definitely up there. And too bad the demo was crappy from what I understand.
I really want to play it now because it didn't get much press. Like, not too many people really talked about it. But you guys are making it sound like it's...
It's decent.
I'm sure it's very well made and it's fun to play or whatever. So,
yeah, if you go into it expecting something absolutely amazing, you'll probably be like, "What is this shit?" Like, "Oh wow, there's like huge animations when you're attacking. Why are things taking forever to come out?" And blah blah blah. But it's just as a cinematic experience, like it works really well. Like I actually last night, my girlfriend watched the movie Thor, and then went, you know what, I would have rather continued to watch you playing through Enslaved than watch that movie. So if nothing else, girl, watching Enslaved is more interesting than watching the movie Thor. So there's that to say for it. But touching on the girl, I do think that one of the nice things about that...
That's safe for the sequel, actually.
Very that's nice.
Ayo. One of the things which is nice, which I think works out with her not being a burden and actually makes her seem really helpful, is because you can issue commands to her, but the way the game is set up is that she will move to very specific locations and perform these commands, and they're always going to be helpful. So it's not that thing of like, oh, hey, you're doing an escort mission. Why is the person I'm trying to escort walking into enemy gunfire to try and punch someone when, you know, all they have is their fists and the enemy has, like, you know, a rocket launcher? And you just get, like, stupid shit with escort missions in so many games. But in this one, it's like, if you tell her to run, she will only move from cover to cover. She'll make sure that she is safe in every location. If you tell her to distract, she will only do it from cover so that she doesn't get hurt and allow you to, like, move around behind. And it's just the actual positioning and where they choose to make things happen just works out really well. So you don't get stuck in a lot of the traditional crap that really bogs down partner and escort missions and things like that. So the last thing which I've been playing was I played through Voltron.
I forgot to talk about Voltron because I fell asleep.
Here's your
chance.
Here's your chance.
I knew you were going to... Like, I actually thought you were skipping that on purpose where you're like, you know what, I just hated Voltron so much, I wiped it from my memory.
No, Here's the thing, and I hate to barge in on your part of the segment.
No, please.
The idea was that 5 TNL people would be hoodwinked into buying this piece of shit and meeting up at 11:30 at night because nobody would fall asleep doing it that late, and that we would, you know, play it and, you know, somebody would form the head and form the blazing sword and all that other wonderful stuff. And, you know, we do that, and we're watching the beginning, and we're all like, oh, yeah, man, Voltron, hell yeah, we used to watch this when we were, like, 4 and 5, it's gonna be awesome, and, you know, you have Peter Cullen saying, like, Voltron, we'll be back after these messages when you hit the pause button, which is probably the best thing in the game. when you get back to it, it's like, now, back to Voltron, but you probably shouldn't ever want to hear that, because going back to the game is the worst thing in the world. You get these, it's trying to be 400 different types of games. You've got, like, this weird QuickTime event thing when you're being Voltron. You've got, like, a Geometry Wars clone that's horrible and makes you feel like you're skating on an ice rink with these lions. And you've got some stupid shoot 'em up that's just, it's garbage. I hate everything about it. And it's one of those things where if it did one of those sections great, okay, you would suffer through the other two to get to it. But none of it's good. And it's just, it's bad times all around, and you get to the point of where the nostalgia wears off, and you're like, you know what, I'm just skipping through these cutscenes, and...
You skip through the cutscene? No wonder you hate this game. The cutscenes are the best part.
The fan service is through the roof. I just wish that they made a game to go with it.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I was expecting it to be really terrible. And what I thought was that, yeah, the parts where you actually play as Voltron are really fucking shitty. It's like the worst QTE segments ever. They're just like, okay, pick an attack. Okay, get it in the bar. Okay, hit a button to defend. You know, yeah. It's like, it just tells you, like, hit Y to defend. Like, wow, that's exciting. Oh, you want to form Blazing Sword? Mash A.
Yeah, okay, mash great. Shit out A.
Right, like, it's dumb, and it's not even hard, because they give you so long to hit the defend button, mm-hmm. and to mash A takes, like, 2 seconds, and they give you, like, 10. So it's like, mash A, you get to 100%, and then Voltron's just standing there, like, staring at you, like...
Now, did you play co-op?
What are you doing? Are you doing? No, because I was supposed to play co-op with Nick.
I've been seeing another.
let me tell you about that co-op thing. You know how we would rage out at people messing up in Warcraft?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When you're Voltron,
definitely.
Each person, it'll say, okay, right leg, you know, each person is responsible for their attack. Okay? So let's just think of that. So these Robeast battles, that if you're doing it yourself, probably won't take very long. You've got
I got all of them.
You know, who's too busy smoking pot while he's playing Xbox. You know, oh man, I forgot to hit A, bro. And then you know, I just get so angry talking.
Wait, does everyone have to hit defend?
Yes.
Oh my god, I would punch babies.
Yeah. And then the part I fell asleep on the very last stage because I was just so tired of the Geometry Wars types. Because there's no danger, you know. You've got five people. It doesn't scale, you know. I played it by myself.
Well, even if it doesn't scale, like they gave you so many lives.
No. There's the same amount of enemies.
Yeah, I mean, I was just saying, like even on single player, it's ridiculously easy.
Yeah, I played it on hard, and it's not that much more difficult. It's slightly more difficult, but not too bad.
I hated it. I'm gonna beat it so I can get the achievements, and then I'm deleting it.
It's an easy 200 achievements or 200 points.
Right. I didn't think it was as bad as you did. Like the part where you're in space was just like that was like the shittiest Geometry Wars clone ever. The parts where you're on ground, I thought it was just kind of like a completely mediocre in every way twin stick shooter. For me, I sat down, I played through, I think the first, how many levels are there? Four? Five?
There are three levels and then a boss battle, so that's four, and then there are three, you know, different parts of the story, so there are 12.
But there's different episodes.
There's like three episodes of four parts each, and it's 12 total, yeah.
Okay. I played through all except like the last set, like in my first setting. I just sat down and like blew through them, and I was like, oh, that was okay. And then I came back and was like, oh, I've only got like one more to go through. Okay. And went through those last like three stages or whatever it was. So it wasn't bad for me. I guess if I like actually sat down and did the whole thing in one go, I probably would have hated it because I stopped playing when I was like, yeah, I'm kind of done with this for right now.
Yeah.
But it was, I don't know. Like, it was entertaining to me. It wasn't great. I wouldn't recommend it to anyone who didn't like Voltron. But I did think it was kind of awesome the way that they were just like, you know, here's a clip from the show to show you where we are. Like, I wasn't expecting them to have so many
clips from the show. But it's completely wrong. There's a part where they're running through the desert, and you jump back into the game, and you're in a forest, and it's like, fuck, man, come on.
Well, what I particularly liked was that they didn't explain the jump in characters. Like, you've got the original setup.
When you have a Laura.
And then all of a sudden the princess is there. Yeah. And it's like, so where'd the guy in black go?
Where'd Holmes go? Oh yeah, he's dead.
Oh, that's right.
So
yeah. But they don't tell you he died. She just shows up in the loading screens all of a sudden.
Well, we're gonna get really nerdy. He doesn't die in the American one. He dies in the Japanese one. He goes to a hospital planet in the American one.
Kind of like how the series starts off showing the Earth getting absolutely bombarded with all kinds of weaponry and everyone gets killed, but the narrator goes, people went underground and survived the assault.
Yeah, right.
Which doesn't happen in the Japanese version. It's just, no, everyone was slaughtered and died. And then they went on to another planet.
It was like the A-Team.
And that's where our story starts.
Right. So Murdoch is flying a helicopter above a bunch of jeeps driven by cultists. And to stop them from attacking, he starts raining down grenades on them. And these jeeps are blowing up, flipping over, and then at the end, all the cultists are captured with their hands tied behind their back.
Like
it's like,
school,
no,
bro.
You're flying around the helicopter, you're throwing down grenades, you killed at least one person. Don't give me that shit.
The difference here, though, is that Voltron doesn't actually have that scene where everyone is alive at the end. It's just a narrator going, and everyone made it out.
Don't worry about it. Everybody made it out. It's cool. They're all right. Don't worry.
Tell the kids not to cry. Everybody's okay.
Well, Optimus Prime didn't die.
I actually got to play this. I did never did get on with any TNL people, but I did get a random group. Now, this game's only 800 Microsoft points, so it's not, you know, it's not like it's like a $15 game or whatever. Wow. But if this game came with a box set of, let's say, Voltron and some other similar animated series, and this was like an extra on the Blu-ray that you could play, this would be,
oh, it would be awesome.
One of the best pack-ins ever. Because it complements the series, and it's everything is introduced by clips from the cartoon, and mm-hmm. that cartoon is just the voice acting and the little characters. It's just such a classic. It's such a classic setting. It's different from, you know, some of the animated things that you might see today. It's just like a really 80s cartoon. You know, the drawing style, the hysterical voice acting. It's great. And the main part of the game, yeah, you're it's a twin stick shooter. You've got five different lions, and they do have differences between them. You know, there are, like, I don't like the red one so much, but I like the yellow one. You know, you're
don't pick the black one. Hate it like I did.
You're going to differentiate between them.
Black.
But really, you don't. I think if you just were a little deeper, if you could upgrade your lions a little bit more, if you could see some different things, this would be a lot better. But it does get a little repetitive. The space areas where it's pretty much almost like a twin stick shooter, but in space. You just kind of have space now, and you can't do some of the things you could do before. But you could like jump out of the way. It's an okay game if you have five people and you're playing it. It supports up to five online, but only two locally for some reason. I went on and I played with just a random group, which I almost never do in any game. And we ran through it, but everybody, after we got to the Voltron battle, everybody cut out. Three people cut out during the Voltron battle. And the other person cut out immediately after, so it doesn't keep people's attention. I think they just wanted to get an achievement or something. But it's not a horrible game. I played a lot worse games, but it's not.
No, you haven't.
It's an okay.
You're way too accepting.
It's not like because you played worse games doesn't mean it's not bad.
A scale from great to horrible, it's closer to horrible, but it's not in the horrible area.
I mean, I played through it, which is definitely something to say for, because I've got a lot of games where I just cannot finish them. I'm trying to think of one right now, but I may have purged them all of my mind.
Otomedes?
But regardless, like...
Athena on the Nintendo?
God, and that... Yes, the Voltron tree. Or, not Voltron, Vagina tree. They're the same thing.
Vagina tree.
It's where five different trees come together and form a giant vagina.
And I'll be the lip. I'll be the outer lips.
Oh, jeez. And I'll form the clit.
That's why this podcast never got released.
Mm-hmm. But are we going to talk about Voltron some more? Or can I get started?
Oh, yeah. Before we go on, what you should do to cleanse yourself from that horrible game is just go on Netflix and watch a few of the episodes. I ended up watching like the first seven or eight, and I was happy with Voltron again instead of having the scathing hate that the game gave me.
Very nice. Well, I've been... I've been actively avoiding Zelda for no discernible reason. I keep meaning to play it, but then when I get home, I'll find anything else to do that's not play Zelda, and I don't know why. So I'm going to really try to hunker down tonight and get some done. But I played Beyond Good and Evil HD because somebody was talking shit about it on the forums. I think it was Josh didn't like the demo. And I don't know what the demo includes, honestly. And I guess it would be pretty easy.
Someone else talked shit about it, too.
Yeah, I guess it might be easy to misrepresent the game because it's, a lot of people say it's like Zelda, and I guess I don't see the huge Zelda resemblance, to be honest.
I think it's just that kind of like action-adventure aspect. Yeah. I mean, it really overall it's not. Like, huge portions of the game are pretty stealthy, which I'd actually kind of
forgotten
about.
It's more like it's more of an action-adventure game that's a little bit Metal Gear solid in the way you're being stealthy, and you basically sneak into places to take pictures of things, to report them to the general public, to try to tell them the truth about what's going with the government selling them out to aliens and stuff. It's a very sci-fi, and you're taking pictures of a lot of stuff, so it's like Pokemon Snap mixed in with Zelda, mixed in with Metal Gear. And the sad part is the game is very good. I think it's very good, but you can definitely feel what they were going for as you play the game. You get a really good feel for what the game the developers were trying to make, but then everything that you actually do play through ends up being a restriction of either the technology at the time or maybe their budget or the size of their team or a lot of things, because it does feel like it's a much bigger story with a much a more ambitious gameplay type, let's say, that's kind of been shoehorned into what actually could fit into a video game at the time it was made, which was when? I don't remember the year. This is like GameCube era, GameCube, PS2, Xbox.
Yeah.
Probably somewhere, what, 02, 03?
Something like that. But, I mean, you can definitely... they wanted to make the town so much bigger than what it actually ended up being. They wanted to make the story so much larger, the different environments you get to. Everything just feels... So this is why I was so excited for a sequel with today's technology. And unfortunately, that's been pushed back even further into oblivion, because I think this game actually did sell pretty well, the HD remake. But they said it was too little too late, kind of. But I still heard that the game was in production just for next-gen consoles, like Wii U and stuff. So I'll have to wait and see what happens. But it's still a very good game. Very fun. Not your usual game. And I think it's just the fact that it's a little different that makes me like it. Doesn't really hold your hand very much at all. Kind of lets you go into
one of the things, like, for me especially, is the music. The music in that game is amazing.
All I can hear is love it. The crazy, like, I don't even know what kind of music it is, but when you're playing that stupid air hockey table game, you know what I'm talking about?
That is the best like, track. The best track like ever. Sometimes they play it during the like racing Spanish game, too. Rap.
Yeah, during the racing game, right. It might be like I don't think it's Spanish, it might be Portuguese, I don't know what it is. It's a kind of like rap thing, and it just gets in my head for years, and I hate it. Then there's like the propaganda song, the only word I understand that they say is propaganda. if you played the game, you would know what the song is. And yeah, the music is it's pretty unique.
I mean, I like it. I thought they actually did a really good job with it overall. The one thing that did strike me really hard about playing that game again, I think it's good. I used to think it was great playing it now. I think it's decent. It's aged, definitely. But I think the plot has a couple of really weird moments. Like, early on in the game, when Jade is first introduced to the whole, like, secret plot, like, these guys show up and basically give her the most ridiculous conspiracy theory ever. They just go, we don't have any actual proof, but we think the people who rule the planet are evil space aliens that are going to kill all of us. And Jade goes, you know what?
I'm on it.
I'll try that.
I am in.
Like,
right.
That is almost
else to do.
The exact conversation. It's so hilarious to watch this action. What?
I think
really?
She already doesn't trust the police. You know, the people who the alpha.
Right.
What are they called? The alpha, whatever.
Alpha sections.
Alpha sections. Yeah. Right. She already doesn't trust them. And later on, you find out that, you know, she's been embroiled in this thing for a while now behind the scenes, and she doesn't even know how deep her background goes into this whole conspiracy,
but it was just it so
kind
weird
of
for
it's
them
not
to come up
bad.
And be like that.
Yeah. Well, what's weird is that they're not very stealthy at all. Like, I'm surprised they didn't get caught immediately and killed. They do something else that's really stupid, where it's like, okay, you're trying not to draw attention to yourself, and then you do this. But whatever, I don't remember. The point is, I like the game. It's cool. You get missions, kind of. You have little mission briefings. Again, they're done very cheaply. They're all in-game assets done. There are no cutscenes in this game. I don't think there's any CG cutscenes or anything like that. It's all done using like the in-game engine. So it ends up being, like, I mean, while it all flows very naturally, while it all comes together very well because it's all using the in-game engine, it also comes through as a little cheap because back then, it's not like you're watching an Uncharted 2 cutscene where it's almost just like the in-game engine, only it looks amazing. You know, this is just it gives it a very kind of cheap feel. Because it's just old technology.
There's a lack of
so many years between now and then, but
I don't want to say shitty textures, but it's like really smooth textures. There's not a huge amount of detail even in the HD remake.
Yeah, that was one. Oh my god, that shark! I was getting so mad at that goddamn shark because you're playing this air hockey game, and it's not really air hockey. It's like he has his side of the board, you have your side of the board. It's okay. It's just like air hockey, except in the middle.
Except there's a tunnel in the middle.
There's like a tunnel, like an obstruction. And there's a winding little path with maybe two curves. so you can get your puck from your side to his side. And there's multiple pucks. There's like four on his side, four on your side. And the point of the game is to push all your pucks into his side, every single one, and then you win. And you don't have a paddle, I guess? You don't have a paddle. You just control a random puck. You don't even pick it. The computer picks a puck. And it's like, this is now your active puck. So you need to just very quickly throw your pucks into that hole and hope that they bounce the right way and get to his side.
If you do it right, I don't remember what it is. I remember it after doing it once or twice, but there's a way to do it, and it's you have to be really fast, and if you just shoot like as soon as you can and aim all of them at the hole, you'll get all four in there every single time within like 5 seconds.
Right. I kind of get the feeling that there aren't a many. It's not like doing some kind of like super physics mini game thing. It's kind of like the pucks end up in generally the same area most of the time, depending on the angle and where they hit. Because you can't really control how hard you hit them. So it kind of feels like they end up in very similar spots very often. So you get to learn the angles. And you're like, when I'm here, this is the direction I shoot to get to the other side. When I'm here, this... So once you learn that, you can very quickly just shoot them all over to him. But sometimes, I swear to God, it cheats. And you're just like, I can't hold all these pucks. And they're all on your side and you lose. And it's horrible. And you need to do it.
I can't hold all of them.
It's like you play him on easy to practice. You play him on normal for money, which you don't even need because you're so rich by the end. And then you play him on a harder setting to earn a gem or an orb, which is what you collect throughout the entire game. And then later on, he calls you up and he's like, hey, Jade, you know, I have another orb. And now he's on super ultra bitch hard. And that is when I have a problem with the game. I had to do it so many times to get it, but whatever, I got it. Oh, and also, very weird, your computer, we're talking about UIs, your UI, like the way that you hold items and stuff, you kind of digitize them into your portable computer, which kind of hangs off
your belt. Portable Mexican man.
And yes, this is what I want to bring up, because the AI of your portable computer is actually a very flamboyant gay Hispanic. Which is so weird.
Oh man, I totally forgot about that. Yeah.
Because how often does that come up? And he's a big character at the beginning. He's kind of a big character at the beginning. He's completely ignored throughout the game, and then he's kind of a big character at the very end. So it's kind of weird. I got to the point where I was like, hey, remember your gay computer dude? They haven't talked about him in a while. But then he comes up at the very, very end to do a few things. And I just thought that was a very weird character that you just don't see very often in a video game. Like, a Hispanic dude who's... And I was a little... Not offended, but I was a little, like, rolling my eyes at, like, the Spanish he uses. Because, you know, you have to sneak in a Spanish word or two into your sentences, because that's how all Hispanic people talk. Because I guess they get the English word. I don't know. And then he has this thing... So I can't even think of an example, but he uses not the wrong word, but the wrong plural form or... You know, and at the wrong
like he says her name Yade,
here and there,
instead of Jade,
and then he also talks. He talks like a gay Mexican dude, so he says Yade, hello Yade. You know, like I talk right now, basically. So, it's
say physics again.
It's weird. It's weird. Let's say. So I played that. I actually finished it. It's very quick. Goes by very quickly. I think it was worth. They had a sale for Cyber Monday. It was like 240 points. Totally worth that. I mean. By all means, but I mean, 10 bucks, I don't know, $5. Yes. It's definitely an older game. And, if you want to play it because you never played before, just know that it's an older game and it's going to feel like an older game, but it's still, I thought it was very well done for its time. And then I played, I played Monster Hunter, obviously. And I'm going to do like a whole in-depth episode about Monster Hunter. Just to clarify, I'm playing the oldest version of Monster Hunter, or the most updated version of the oldest version of Monster Hunter, which is Monster Hunter G, the original G, ported to a PSP. It's called Freedom. And I knew that if I didn't start there, it would become unplayable, because they have made a lot of improvements to the series over the years. So for anyone that hears me talk about how horrible Monster Hunter is and the controls and the camera, it's all true. That hasn't changed so much that it's good now. But... There have been many improvements, incremental improvements made throughout the series. And I am playing the worst version easily, and I'm still having a lot of fun with it. Once you get past the fact that the controls suck and the cameras suck and the monsters are big giant cheaters, once you get past that, it actually gets to be like a test of your skill. It's like, you think you're good? Like, can you beat this giant dude with your stupid little annoying guy that has giant animations that you can't, you just cannot like get out of many of the animations. So it's just a huge risk reward. Like, do you want to do your huge attack that might do a lot of damage, but then the enemy might hit you and it's like two hits, you're dead sometimes, especially when you get to the G rank stuff that's supposed to be multiplayer, but since there's no online play, it really is not multiplayer very much for anyone. Whatever. It's a good game. And it takes up all my time. And I don't think I've played anything else this week. It's just basically been, I finished Beyond Good and Evil, I ignored Zelda a little bit more, and then...
All for Monster Hunter.
Here, yeah, and then I played more Monster Hunter. Although I do want to bring one thing up about Zelda, is that I tried the bamboo cutting minigame. Have you guys played that?
Oh yeah, isn't that pretty early on?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can find.
Oh, you find the little guy, the guy that's the out there on an asteroid swordsman. Or whatever. And...
Right. So I don't think it's an asteroid, but no, I did
whatever.
I did the bamboo cutting minigame, and the very first time I tried it, I was doing it very slow, because I knew that if I got the wrong kind of cut, the thing might fall over, and I got like 6 cuts, and I'm like, okay, obviously that's you're not supposed to do it slow, so I went crazy. I just swung left right as fast as I could. I got 31 cuts.
Cool.
Which the guy said was pretty good. I tried it again. I got 33 cuts. And, I mean, he's just giving me random garbage. Here's some evil energy that looks like a ball. Here's, like, a crystal feather. And I was like, thanks, dude. I don't even know what this is for. I just started playing the game, and I left. You know? Whatever. I came back later, and I tried the game again, and I couldn't get anywhere near those scores ever again. Ever again. What? I keep trying.
I think I only got, like, 21 or something.
Yeah, like, I keep
early,
trying.
Like, the low 20s.
Like, the bamboo keeps moving out of the way, and then I can't even reach it, and Link just can't move a little bit to the left to keep cutting it. He's like, nope, it's over. Sorry. Bamboo's gonna fall. And it just seems weird that they made a mini game out of slashing left and right as fast as you can, which is the very thing that will almost break the motion controls because they're not that accurate. You know? So it encourages you to swing left and right as fast as you can, but doing so, you kind of... It's like the perfect way to get the feel that this is not 100% working right because it's motion controls. I don't know. It's like a mini game designed to make you see that it's garbage and I hate it.
You just can't let a podcast go by without criticizing
slamming
Nintendo and
Nintendo. I got to get it in at least once. So that's what I did with Zelda. I turned it on, I did that bamboo thing, and that was it. But I will definitely get around to playing the game more, and I'm sure we'll have a laundry list of amazing complaints by next week of how much I hate the new Zelda, which is still a good game. All right.
Excuse me.
Anyone else?
All right.
Was that everybody?
I think we've got Nick left.
Yeah, I've already said my piece on Voltron, but I've also been playing... I played a little bit of Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 again. I didn't play this online because I had company over. I had a couple people over, and we were, you know, passing the controller back and forth. So I've only really played the multiplayer. I wish there would be a mode in, you know, they've got the training mode and they've got the mission mode now. And I wish there would just be a mode where you could just have an excuse to use all the different attacks you have. You know, I guess in mission mode, they say, well, you know, do this juggle or whatever, and you get a point. But it's
You know what? They need a training mode like Virtua Fighter, where it teaches you to play the game at a basic level, at least, and then it kind of ramps up. Because, like, it's called training. Training mode is just do whatever you want, practice mode, I guess.
It's practice.
And then the other mode you meant, the mission mode, it wants you to do stupid things that are not practical half the time. Like, most of the things they make you do don't even, just like Street Fighter 4, They don't end up being your bread and butter. This is not what you would do in a real fight. You know, these are just actually things to do with weird timing that are kind of tough sometimes. So it's more of a challenge mode, not really anything that would teach you to play the game at a basic level.
And then if your proficiency isn't that high, you can only really go, like, I always leave like 3 or 4 for each character at the end that I just don't even want to attempt that because you have to do an air juggle and, you know, start it this way and do an air juggle and then
delay a button press by a certain amount of time on the way up or on the way down. It's very annoying.
I'm not into the game at that level. I just want to, you know, beat up my friends. But if they had a better single player mode, I think they could pretty easily make one, considering how much talent Capcom has working on these games. It would make it more interesting for me. Just have a better single player. The multiplayer, I don't know. I'm not an expert. I'm not Bon or you know, Razor from the TNL forums that knows all the intricacies. But I, you know, I do have fun playing it, but it's not that great of a game where it couldn't benefit from something a little bit extra, something a little bit different that they could put in. Like you said, like Virtua Fighter did, where you're using your moves, you're engaged, you're learning the characters, you have a purpose there, but the single player is just so weak. And, you know, $40, luckily I didn't pay for the game because we were provided a copy, but I couldn't see myself doing it. I think you should just give a little bit something to the, you know, to do when you're not playing online. Otherwise I don't have any real complaints over it. I don't think it's that great or that horrible. It's a competent game, and so I had a little bit of fun with that. And then the last thing I've been playing, I just started today, I'm playing Trine 2 on Steam.
Ooh.
Never played the original Trine. I don't know how it got past me. A lot of games get past me because, you know, just a lot of the stuff coming out. But it's you can take possession of one of three characters. There's a wizard, a warrior, a soldier, knight, and a thief, Assassin's Creed looking woman. Mm-hmm. that you can alternate in between, Lost Vikings style. You can, when you come up against certain obstacles, you can switch your characters. So if you need to cut down something, you get the soldier. If you need to levitate something, you get the wizard. I've only played local multiplayer so far, which is welcome on a PC game.
There's, you know, multiplayer?
There's local multiplayer and there's online multiplayer. The game isn't out till December 20th. But
Do you control like different characters, or do you both have the ability to turn into all three characters?
It would depend on like how many players are playing. Like, I played the original Trine on the PC with my cousin, and between the three characters, like one of you will control either the knight, and then the other person will control the wizard or the thief. But you can like switch characters. So one moment you could be the knight. And then you could switch out to the thief, and then that gives your partner the ability to switch.
Right.
I'll give you a good example of that. I've only played multiplayer so far, and I've never played the original, but I can see that the game will be a lot harder if you're playing by yourself. Yeah. But with the way it is now, with two people playing, if there's a big gap to get across, I'll start as the wizard, and then I'll have my partner levitate across the gap on a something that I'm levitating, like a box or a plank. And then when he gets across to the other side, he'll turn into the wizard and then do the same thing for me. So as long as I'm not the wizard, the other person can be the wizard. You can only have one wizard each, you know, at any one time, but you can switch in between them at will. It's very effective, and the graphics are just gorgeous. They're very they're not realistic graphics, but they're not cartoonish graphics. They're very heavy on just details of flowers and leaves and nature and waterfalls and things like that in the background. Although there are some, you know, castles, and you go down into labyrinths and caves. It seems to be a short game. I think I'm about a third of the way through, and I played for maybe 2-3 hours. So it's probably like a 6-hour game that some people can get through in 4 hours, but really gives you a lot to do. And I'm looking forward to talking about it next week more when I played single player and finished multiplayer, probably finished both. But it's really something to keep your eyes on. I think it's coming out December 20th on Steam, PC, Xbox Live, I think, and I think on PSN. I might be mistaken.
It's a voice work the same as the first game, because it had a really good narrator in it, and each character had a really good voice that fit their character very well.
The voice work is very good. I don't know if it's the same crew as before, because I haven't played the first one, but it's very very well done. And actually, the person I was playing with remarked, you know, how come all the good voice acting is on PC games? Which I don't agree with, but it just shows you that the voice acting really does pull you in. And this is a thing that I get into a lot, and you'll probably hear me say it a million more times, but I don't like when things are really played for one-liners and laughs and just being goofy. I like to kind of get into the game. And this is a very bright game as far as a personality, but it's not crude humor. It's not played to be funny. You know, they're likable characters. They're not serious characters, but it's not beating you over the head with, hey, we're pretty hip. You know, we're using double entendres or whatever. So you really get into it. It's unlike this podcast. I'll form the clit. You know, there's nothing like that in
you see sexual innuendo in the fucking checkout girl, the item checkout girl in Zelda. So I don't know what
you're
to say.
You're still a beginner.
It's not there.
You're a Skyward Sword fledgling. You don't know. Wait till you get into real meat and potatoes.
I told her I was coming back for her when she asked me. She's like, oh, you're lying. Let me hold your cock. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
No, that didn't happen.
It's going to be a, never mind, never mind. Next. Just go.
All right.
That's
it. I think
that's everybody. I think we've gone around the table. That about covers it.
I think I'm going to actually, when I finish Monster Hunter, I want it, like, I honestly, with every fiber of my being, I want to jump right into Freedom Unite, but I think I'm actually going to take a break and do Metal Gear Solid Portable Ops with my friend John, because I think you need to multiplayer that. And I can even do it with the collection. I can use transferring to go from one to the other. So that's exciting.
All right, so other than Monster Hunter, what... any ideas what we want to talk about for next week's podcast?
UI
and thoughts. UI and games.
We should talk about games.
Yeah, since we didn't really talk about it this time, we just kind of got off into Resident
Evil.
What
we're supposed to talk about.
That infernal Monster Hunter game. Mizzle sleeps with his nuts between copies of Monster Hunter. It's just,
I do. It's too I have much. UMD just taped to them.
But we'll figure something out and maybe be a little more focused.
Maybe we should think of what we're going to talk about on Sunday at some point that isn't Saturday at 1 in the morning or Sunday at 1 in the morning.
Yeah, sounds like a good plan.
All right,
well, thank you all for tuning in. This is the cast of the Miserable Podcast Secrets signing off. And, of course, join us for the conversation at the-nextlevel.com, the next level message boards, and if I can find the number,
if you want to leave us a message that we can play on a future podcast, you can do so at 312-233-2865. If you have any trouble remembering any of this, just as Eric said earlier, just put the next level into Google. We are almost always the first hit. I think we're always the first hit, and you can go on our forums there, and you might be thrilled with what you find. But
if you want to join the campaign to make sure that we're on the first result, a la the Spreading Santorum campaign for Rick Santorum, if you want to be part of that campaign, you can also call us and leave us a message, and we'll add you to the ranks.
All right.
All right.
Thanks,
guys.